Currently, let's move to item 12, which is our presentation on capital market assumptions. And
thank you.
Sorry. I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
I did have one comment I wanted to make, talking about our liquidity fund and the reason for 4 years and now 3 years that I was comfortable with is that the purpose of that, at least primary purpose from my point of view, was that we would not find ourselves on the downside of a cycle and have to sell our prime assets that were most saleable. So it's the other edge of the sword, if you will. If things are on the way back up and we're at the bottom, absolutely, it'd be nice to have more assets to put in investments that are at a good price. On the other side, I don't think I'd want to see us, unless there was reasons that I haven't yet heard or understand, I want to see us go below 3 years. That's a cushion that I thought very thoughtfully and very appropriately put in place.
Yeah, the concept of not selling those assets and having the permanent impairment of capital was kind of front and center when we were talking about this in 2016. I think we've gotten out of the habit of thinking about liquidity squeezes and liquidity crunches in these good markets that we've had, but that certainly was a topic of conversation 6 years ago when we initiated this.
Well, we clearly went with the most conservative at 4. We readjusted to 3, right? Yeah. So, and then that's where we are now. But I think the data would show that over time, the cycle duration for the downturns is what, 12 to 14 months is the sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
So it's prudent. 3 is prudent. I'm not advocating. I was just raising an issue.
Fair enough.
So let's move on to capital markets, unless there are other comments. Seeing none.
So this is an exercise we go through on an annual basis, and it's really designed to assess the investment strategy in light of our new 10-year views to see if any adjustments are appropriate. And I'll just take you to the executive summary here. So the observations, very interestingly and probably not surprisingly, based on market volatility, our expected returns going forward have increased somewhat. The portfolio has been providing good downside protection and will continue to do so through heightened volatility. And then you guys may recall, and we've just been talking about it, in 2021, sort of early in 2021, based on deep analysis we did in late 2020 and early 2021, the board chose to reduce the benefit payment coverage to 3 years from 4. And then the fund has grown. And so with the analysis that Tim just showed in the previous agenda item, based on that growth, you have more assets to cover those liabilities. And so as a percentage of the total fund, you don't need as much. So just to cut to the chase, spoiler alert, we're not recommending any significant portfolio adjustments based on our current 10-year capital market assumptions. And we are just making a recommendation along with staff to shift 2% of the liquidity pool to the growth and diversifying.
Excellent.
Just as background, so this takes us back to what we were talking about in late 2020, early 2021. It was an asset liability study. So we were talking a lot about risk tolerance with the notion that based on the conditions, your risk tolerance sort of moved up a little bit in terms of willingness. And that was your comfort with the plan and recognition that, 4 years was just a lot of coverage. And then the ability moved a little bit to the left. And then we spent a lot of time on that liquidity analysis. And so we looked at inflows and outflows on a prospective basis, and we came up with a series of mixes that showed you that how to get to 3 years gross benefit coverage, which you know, making the reasonable assumption that you're going to continue to get your contributions from your sponsors, 9 years of net benefit coverage. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. That's just a little bit of preamble, shift gears to our current capital market assumptions. And I use the word current sort of loosely here because we do these on an annual basis at the end of the calendar year. So this goes back to the analysis was done in November and December of last year, you know, coming out of the global pandemic, our assumptions moved up a little bit, but you can still see quite low relative to history. And I'm just going to pull out two of these on this eye chart. U.S. large cap, reflective of the S&P 500 index, 10-year annualized return of 5.3%. It was 5.1 the last time we did this. And then let's look at core fixed income, right? Just sort of a good diversified mix of government bonds, credit, and mortgage-backed securities, 2.2%. So those being the primary components of most institutional portfolios, still low, 5.3 and 2.2. What I will say that's interesting is that, you know, with the drawdown, since we did this in November, with the drawdown in the market, you know, you would naturally expect the next 10 years to be higher. And in fact, they are. We update these monthly just based on current market valuations and go forward expectations. So as of March, that 5.3%, we were looking at 5.9 for the next 10 years. And as of April, just a month later, another 20 basis points. So 6.1. So I've rerun the analysis with both those March and April numbers, and I'll tell you what that impact is when we get there. But it doesn't change the recommendation, but I think it'll be good and interesting for you to know. Oh, and by the way, that 2.2 was 1.5. A year ago, 2.2 in December with rising rates, 2.9% in March, and 3.4% in April. So that sort of gets to Trustee Kwan's point about, you know, we're seeing yields increasing on fixed income. Is there a point at which adding duration may make some sense? Skip over that. We just talked about the differences. That's the difference between the 2022 and 2021 forecast, and sort of get to the punchline on slide 11. So here I'm making comparisons to with your current policy to the recommended policy, which takes out the 2% from liquidity and adds it pro rata to the about three quarters of it goes into growth and a quarter of it goes into diversifying, excuse me. And then, so comparing those two, also for informational purposes, compared it to just a sort of a straightforward risk-based allocation between stocks and bonds, US stocks, or sorry, global stocks and US bonds, core bonds, in 80-20 mix, 70-30 mix, and a 60-40 mix. So just sort of different risk profiles of a very traditional portfolio for comparative purposes. And so we use our capital market assumptions, which is return risk as measured by standard deviation and correlation amongst the asset classes. And we can see the output. So 6.3%. For the current policy, you know, slightly higher for the recommended policy, not even 10 basis points. These are just rounded to a single decimal place. And then a commensurate increase in risk, slight increase in risk from 12.1 to 12.4. And then the portfolio efficiency staying the same, meaning that the increase in return is offset by the increase in risk in terms of portfolio efficiency. Of course, and I love to point this out, you're much more efficient than your traditional portfolios prospectively, just because of the additional diversification benefit you get. And from a risk perspective, looking at standard deviation, you're sort of right about a 70-30 portfolio. So that's the impact of the analysis that we did based on our capital market assumptions that were presented at the beginning of the year. I'll just tell you that using three 31 numbers, so where the market was at the end of the first quarter, the 6.4 jumps to 7.0. And then using end of April numbers, it jumps again to 7.2. So for what that's worth, because you know you've lost some assets, the expected return going forward on those lower assets is higher, from 6.4 all the way up to 7.2 over the next 10 years. So we like to look at this portfolio not just in terms of the mechanical cranking of the handle, which takes into account those three inputs, risk, return, and correlations, all forecasted to get you that output. We also like to look at risk contribution, and you can see where you're getting most of your risk. The blue bar is from equity risk still in the portfolio. And this is a different lens looking at that risk. And you can see here that 11.1 goes up to 11.4%. And it's still right in line, somewhere between that 70-30 and 60-40 risk. And then another lens that we look at that you may be familiar with from past reports, similar reports, we take the portfolio and we put it back in time. And you can see here the difference between the blue bar and the orange bar, both, quite a bit less drawdowns than your traditional risk-based portfolios. You can see they're pretty even, right? Just in the subprime, the global financial crisis, you would have dropped about another percentage point by not having that additional cash in the portfolio. Similarly, in the tech bubble bursting, rate rise right on top of each other, and very slight differences in these other two down market scenarios. And then the second test that we do is we just shock the portfolio by saying, okay, if you've got so much in non-dollar denominated investments, what happens if the dollar rises by 20%? What happens if rates rise to the rate sensitive part of the portfolio? What happens if you get a 20% drawdown in equities? And what happens if credit spreads blow out by 100 basis points? So all, just sort of shock scenarios to the portfolio as it stands today. And you can see, again, the orange and the blue bars, very similar, not even 50 basis points here with a 20% equity drawdown, and otherwise, almost indistinguishable. So it's just a sort of a common sense sniff test to say, are we doing anything? Will there be any unintended consequences by making this move? And, 2% cash moving into growth and diversifying, you wouldn't really expect that to happen. And so that takes us to the last slide. If you approve the recommendation, next steps would be to codify it in the investment policy statement through the annual resolution. Staff will develop, figure out exactly how to implement that 2% change and monitor on an ongoing basis. And that, unless there are questions or comments, concludes my report.
Thank you, Scott. And at least for today's purposes, this is a presentation item only, so that there's no decision being made today, at least, or any votes taken. Any thoughts or comments for Scott on capital market assumptions? I'm not seeing any, so thank you, Scott. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.